You're listening to an Airwave Media Podcast.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Let Mysteries at Midnight be your destination for detective whodunits and captivating mystery stories. You'll hear classic stories like Sherlock Holmes, Agatha Christie's Poirot, and short tales from H.G. Wells, Charles Dickens, Edgar Allan Poe, and others. I'm Christopher, and I read these classic stories in the soothing style of a bedtime story, so you can listen to them in bed when you drift off to sleep. Search for Mysteries at Midnight on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or your favorite podcast app, and follow and subscribe so you don't miss out on new episodes.
All right, quiet on the set.
Camera speed.
Sound production, take one.
Action!
Welcome to From Beneath the Hollywood Sign. If you love old movies, Hollywood history, or the golden age of filmmaking, you've come to the right place. This is the podcast that talks about amazing stories of Tinseltown from another era. Hear fascinating conversations with writer-producer Steve Kubine, who quite literally lives just beneath the Hollywood Sign, and actress-writer Nan McNamara. Now your hosts, Steve and Nan.
Welcome back, everyone. We have a great show for you today, and it combines two of my favorite things in the world.
Okay.
Classic movie stars.
Yes.
And 1970s disaster movies.
Well, I can't think of anything I'd rather talk about more.
And you know, it took me a minute to realize that there was a correlation between these two things, because as you know, I grew up watching old classic movies with my dad, which I love to do late at night. And one night, I remember specifically, we're watching a movie called Take One False Step. It was this great film noir with William Powell, and it starred my lovely friend and neighbor, Marcia Hunt.
Oh, right.
It also starred Shelley Winters.
Okay.
And we're watching it, and we're watching it, and just in the middle of the movie, my dad points to Shelley Winters, and in this movie, she is va-va-voom,
gorgeous,
blonde,
yes.
Zoftig, and he goes, "Hey, kiddo, you know that's Mrs. Rosen from the Poseidon Adventure, right?" And my mind exploded.
You just kind of went, what?
Because I couldn't compute the kindly, heavyset Mrs. Rosen from
right.
the Poseidon Adventure being this va-va-voom, beautiful, sexy woman.
Yeah.
And so that's the moment I realized, oh, wait, these older stars grow up.
Well,
and they get older and they have to work.
In reviewing the films that we're going to talk about, I kind of forgot exactly what you're saying.
Yeah.
That when you watched them as a young person, you don't realize that. I mean, I think I would have known Fred Astaire as a kid.
Yes.
But some of these other folks, it's fascinating
to
see.
Yeah, it is. As I kind of got into movies more and I started researching, and I realized that the disaster movie genre, which really kicked off in 70 mm-hmm. and in that decade, definitely, it gave these classic stars a new lease on life.
Yes.
It kept them employed. It was lucrative, but more importantly, it kept them in front of the public. They really extended careers because of these great disaster movies.
Right.
So today, we're going to talk about the great disaster movies of the 70s and all the classic movie stars who cashed in.
Well, let's kick it off with, some people say this film is the grandfather of this genre.
It is. The granddaddy of them all.
The granddaddy of them all is Airport.
Yes.
In 1970. And the reason why this movie holds such a special place in my heart is that it was filmed at the Minneapolis St. Paul International Airport, which to this day you can still see, if I'm not mistaken. I know there's a lot of construction, and I'm actually going to be visiting there in a little while. So I'll
take pictures.
But the actual roof line has remained the same.
Oh, from the movie, from when they're looking out.
Yeah, that kind of 60s, 70s architecture.
Which
so I will verify that. I will verify and report back.
Oh, I love that. It's funny. I always assumed they shot that probably in Chicago.
Well, it takes place in Chicago, but they chose Minneapolis, according to some research that I found, because of the snow. Of course, Chicago has snow as well, but the Twin Cities, a smaller airport than O'Hare. And what ended up happening is when they were filming, no snow on the ground. And they ended up using sawdust that they colored white for some of it. And then there was a huge snowstorm, thank God. And everything worked out.
Oh, I didn't know. I love that. Well, I expect pictures. I want to see that roof.
All right. We'll see what I can do.
But you know, Airport, it came out in 1970. It was based on Arthur Haley's blockbuster novel by the same name. And it's about this intrepid flight crew who depart a snowy airport in Chicago. And they have to deal with this despondent man who smuggled a bomb onto the flight, clearly long before 9/11, when you could actually smuggle a bomb onto a flight.
Right.
Without going
through. No x-rays, no
exactly,
TSA.
No air marshals, things like that. And it's really a survival story about how these people have to deal with this man who ignites a bomb on a flight.
Right.
Of course, it is laden with classic film stars.
Well, speaking of which, if I'm going to get on a plane, I'd love to have Dean Martin be my pilot. I mean,
if he's
talk
not
about
drinking.
A hunky. If he's not, yes, right. But I mean,
I would want a breathalyzer test before I got on Dean Martin's flight.
Isn't he just the like classic casting for a pilot?
He is. He's central casting.
Yes, he is.
He's good looking. And you can imagine him sipping martinis in the lounge with the flight attendants.
Flirting with the flight attendants.
Exactly. Of course, my favorite star of that movie is Burt Lancaster. Burt is the man.
He is the man.
I have loved him since film noirs like Crisscross, and I've loved him in, my God, he's good in Sorry, Wrong Number, The Killers, Come Back, Little Sheba, Sweet Smell of Success, Judgment at Nuremberg. I mean, he is a bona fide major movie star, and here he is in Airport.
And I don't think he was very happy about being in it afterward. I think he was pretty much like, this is a horrible movie, but I made a lot of money.
And they paid these stars a lot of money, and that was the motivation for a lot of these stars appearing, which I've read in a lot of their autobiographies, is like, you know, it was a paycheck for me.
Yeah, apparently Dean Martin and Burt Lancaster also had a percentage of the profits. So if they reached a certain box office number, they were going to get a nice little paycheck.
So Burt, you can't complain too much.
I know, you can't.
You can't complain too much. And Burt plays the heroic airport manager, Mel Bakersfield, love the name, who not only does he have to keep things calm on the ground, but he has to deal with his messy personal life, which involves his mistress, played by Jean Seberg, who also works for the airlines. And of course, Burt is married. So yeah, it's messy. It's kind of like a disaster movie / soap opera all in one.
Yeah, it truly is.
Of course, I mentioned all of Burt's great movies. And of course, he won the Best Actor for Elmer Gantry in 1960. So he was the man.
Now, one of the people that appears in this film that continues to do disasters is George Kennedy.
George Kennedy.
He was in all of the subsequent sequels.
He was in every one of them. Even though after Airport, they did Airport 75, they did Airport 77, they did Airport 79. Well, the Airport 75, 77, and 79 were entirely different team of producers, but they liked the character so much, they decided to bring George Kennedy's character as the through line through all these movies.
His career is fascinating to me because he really started out as a bad guy in so many films.
The worst.
But he ends his career as just this, you know, working man.
And then he realizes he has a funny bone in the 80s and 90s when he does all those Naked Gun movies, you know, with Leslie Nielsen. He's so funny. And you would never think the way he started his career that he would have a funny bone in him.
Right.
But he does.
Right.
You know, he started out playing such horrible, horrible tough guys, like in Straight Jacket with Joan Crawford in 1964. Terrible. He's the bad guy in The Sons of Katie Elder in 1965. And then there's his Academy Award winning turn in Cool Hand Luke in 1967 with Paul Newman. He was kind of a bad guy.
Yes, but he was.
A cool bad guy,
yeah.
You know what we should talk about more is talk about his character.
Oh, okay,
Because he was the high-strung chief mechanic, and he has some of the most unintentionally funny moments in all these movies because he's so high-strung and really hilarious. But he was Joe Petroni was his name, which is a great name for a chief mechanic of an airline. It was just a memorable character that was so popular, as I said, that he was the only character, I think, included in all the sequels.
Right.
So good on George.
Yeah, you're right. He created a character that was not only serious, but had those humorous moments.
Unintentionally. I mean, he was sort of like the sky is falling kind of character.
Yeah. All right. Can we talk about Helen Hayes?
Oh, can we talk about Helen Hayes?
She plays the stowaway.
Yeah.
And which again, remember, this is 1970s.
It was probably a little easier to stow away in those days.
Yeah.
What was her name? She had the greatest name.
It was Ada.
Quonset.
Yes.
Ada Quonset. Isn't that a great name? Who named these characters Arthur Haley?
So she actually wins an Oscar for this performance.
Yes.
Best Supporting Actress.
Which in a recent episode, we did an Oscar show where we talked about Oscar firsts and Oscar memorable wins.
Right.
Well, I'm not 100% sure, but I think she might win the award for the longest stretch between Oscar wins.
Oh, that's an interesting
because
stat.
Because people may know, she won the Best Actress Oscar in 1931 for The Sin of Madame Claudet. And then she didn't win another Oscar until 1970 for this role as Ada Quonset.
Yeah.
So long stretch of time in between wins. And
right.
I think she's in the history books of Oscar for that.
Okay.
But check me. I'm sure people out there will. So.
And she was still working a bit back then. I mean,
she
was doing
She's
television.
Still working. And actually, afterwards, she did all those Herbie the Love Bug movies that we loved.
Yeah.
And I think she'd gotten an Oscar nomination in 1956 for Anastasia with Ingrid Bergman. So she was still working. But I think Airport really got her back in front of moviegoers.
Right.
In a big way.
Another actress in the film that was also nominated was Maureen Stapleton.
Yes, she won the Oscar over Maureen.
Yeah, and Maureen's performance, I mean, it's heartbreaking.
Harrowing and just so heartbreaking.
Yeah.
Of course, she plays the wife of the bomber.
And she knows there's something wrong.
She knows her man is about to do something really bad.
Yeah, the vulnerability and fragility and desperation that she's able to portray is really gorgeous.
Yes, really beautiful work on her part, which kind of brings up the bomber himself, who's one of my favorite film actors of the 40s and 50s, Van Heflin.
Yes.
And in fact, this was Van Heflin's final film. This was his swan song.
He was fabulous in this part.
Yes.
You really do see the conflict that he's struggling with as he decides to take out a life insurance policy and essentially commit suicide with the hope that his wife will be financially well off.
He's trying. I mean, he's looking out for her. I mean, it's a beautiful, nuanced performance. And he's not just the typical bad guy in a movie.
Yeah. And he had come from some of the films in the 40s, especially one that I recently saw.
We've
talked about before, Strange Loves of Mark Ivers. How would you describe him back in the 40s?
He's sort of a tough guy with a soft center. He's not your typical romantic leading man, but he ended up, there's something so romantic about him. You see why all these beautiful actresses fell for him.
Yeah, there's something hurting inside him.
Yeah,
there's those characters.
Like a wounded quality to him that's so appealing. And he ended up winning the Best Supporting Actor Oscar in 1942 in the beginning of his career for a great film called Johnny Eager. It's sort of a crime drama.
Mm-hmm.
And he's so good in it. I just think even though he won an Oscar and some people know his body of work, I find he's one of the most underappreciated actors of that era.
Yeah.
His name doesn't elicit the response like Kirk Douglas and Burt Lancaster and
but
people
he's
like
of
that
same
he's
ilk.
He's so of that ilk.
Yeah.
And if you've never seen him in anything, I would recommend Act of Violence, 1949.
Okay.
Such a great movie with Janet Leigh and Robert Ryan and Mary Astor.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. It's a really great film noir sort of crime drama. Oh, and Shane. You've got to see Shane, 1953.
Yeah. And just a reminder that we put the names of the films that we're mentioning in the episode in our notes on YouTube and in the notes on the podcast.
Yes,
so you can
absolutely
check them out and check out these movies. Can we just throw out a couple of other people that are in this film before we move on to another one?
There's a couple I would love to talk about.
Dana Winter. We've talked about her before.
For people who've been following this from the beginning, we talked about Dana Winter when we talked about the great lawyer Greg Bautzer.
Right.
Dana Winter was the one who was able to get him to the altar.
Yes,
where hundreds of others failed.
Could not.
Dana succeeded.
A And she is playing Burt Lancaster's estranged wife
yes.
in Airport. Barbara Hale. We've talked about her as well.
Oh, yes. Who doesn't love Della Street from the iconic TV series Perry Mason? Barbara Hale was the girl Friday that we all wished we had.
Yeah. And plays Dean Martin's wife.
And also Burt Lancaster's sister. So it's a little complicated. It's very incestuous up there in the, the airline world.
You got to get a chart out and make sure that you can figure it out.
Poor Barbara, she has no idea that old Dino has knocked up the flight attendant, played by Jacqueline Bisset. So yes. she has no idea what awaits her when that plane finally lands.
Another quick little fun fact about this film. There is another stewardess, flight attendant, but called stewardess back in the day, by the name of Patty Polson. And she was a stewardess that worked for American Airlines, and she won a contest as the most attractive stewardess. And part of what she won was a role in Airport. So she plays one of the stewardesses that you see, you know, walking back and forth.
That is awesome.
She also became, for a number of years, the face of American Airlines. And if you look her up, you'll see why.
That is awesome. But we can't move off of Airport without talking about Virginia Gray.
Okay.
But I know. Virginia Gray, I have such a soft spot in my heart for her. The thing that most people may remember her for is she is in the star-studded movie from 1939, The Women, where she plays, I think her character's name is Pat, and she's a fellow sales clerk at the perfume counter with Joan Crawford. And she's the one who just tells Joan Crawford what time it is.
I love her in that.
Well, she was sort of the good luck charm of Ross Hunter, who was the producer of Airport, and he ended up putting her in all of his movies, All That Heaven Allows in 1955 and Backstreet in 61 and Madam X in 66. I mean, Gary Marshall had Hector Elizondo.
Yes,
you know,
yes.
Certain producers and directors had their good luck charms.
Right,
and
right.
She was Ross Hunter's good luck charm.
Interesting.
And she's a lovely actress, and she was the one-time love of Clark Gable, and everyone thought that he was going to marry her, and he never did, and it kind of broke her heart, and she ended up never marrying, and it's a sad story, but she was a wonderful actress who deserves a shout-out.
Another interesting story about this film and some of the other Airports, because it was being produced by Universal in the early 70s and the 60s, they had people under contract that
yes.
were just kind of day players.
Yeah.
They might be on a television show. Well, they were needed as passengers
yes.
on this flight. So if you go and really look at the people behind... You know,
The stars,
you will see people from the television series of the day.
Yes.
I believe Pat Priest.
Oh, the Munsters.
Who was from the Munsters. I believe that she's in it.
And Marilyn Munster.
Yeah. And one of the women that played Gladys Kravitz. I know there were two actresses that played.
Sandra Gould.
I think.
So good.
Yeah. And I think you'll find her in the film as well. So that's a fun thing if you watch the film to look for those people.
Pick the TV star.
Yeah.
From the passengers list.
We have a lot more disaster movies to discuss. But first, it's time for our Hollywood pop quiz.
All right. And of course, keeping in the disaster movie theme, we're going to do it a little bit differently. I'm going to list a cast and you tell me what the movie was.
I love this.
All right.
It's sort of like Jeopardy.
Yeah. And keep in mind,
it's
still in the 70s and it's still in the disaster movie genre.
Okay.
The cast was Rock Hudson, Mia Farrow, Robert Forster, and Jeanette Nolan.
Oh, that's a great cast.
Great cast.
Yeah. All right. We'll be back with the answer and more disaster films after this.
Hey, y'all. Spooky season is here. And if you're looking for a show to whet your appetite for a little haunted history, then I'd like to invite you to check out Southern Gothic, a chart-topping history podcast that explores some of the most infamous legends, folklore, ghost stories, and hauntings of the American South. We've covered all sorts of stuff from the Bell Witch of Tennessee to the disappearance of the Confederate submarine, the H.L. Hunley, not to mention our deep dives into the local lore of some of America's oldest and most haunted cities, like New Orleans, Charleston, and St. Augustine. So, if you're ready for a little good old-fashioned Halloween storytelling with a commitment to quality historical research, then be sure to check out Southern Gothic today. It's available now on all your favorite podcast apps.
Throughout history, royals across the world were notorious for incest. They married their own relatives in order to consolidate power and keep their blood blue. But they were oblivious to the havoc all this inbreeding was having on the health of their offspring. From Egyptian pharaohs marrying their own sisters to the Habsburgs' notoriously oversized lower jaws. I explore the most shocking incestuous relationships and tragically inbred individuals in royal history. And that's just episode one. On the History Tea Time podcast, I profile remarkable queens and LGBTQ+ royals, explore royal family trees, and delve into women's medical history and other fascinating topics. I'm Lindsay Holiday, and I'm spilling the tea on history. Join me every Tuesday for new episodes of the History Tea Time podcast, wherever fine podcasts are enjoyed.
Stephen Ann will be right back, but first another stop on the Hollywood tour. Remember that scene in The Exorcist from 1973? It's where Reagan, played by Linda Blair, turns her head completely around in a circle. That's something you'll never unsee, right? Ever wonder how they pulled that off? Remember, CGI special effects weren't even invented yet. Well, they built a small, lifelike dummy with a neck and head that swiveled 360 degrees, and they used that for that famous shot. And get this, that creepy sound of her neck turning in a circle? That was made by twisting an old leather wallet around a microphone. And now back to Steve and Nan from Beneath the Hollywood Sign.
Welcome back, everybody. Before we jump into the next disaster movie, we just wanted to give a shout out to our listener of the week is Kelly Keaton. Kelly, thank you so much for sharing our pod with friends and family on social media. And we really appreciate you listening.
Thanks, Kelly.
All right, let's touch on a movie we've talked about a lot.
We both love this movie.
I just watched it not too long ago. The Poseidon Adventure.
Yeah, and if you really want to hear about The Poseidon Adventure, go back and listen to our podcast episode we did about New Year's Eve movies. You get to know everything about it. But of course, it had classic stars like Shelley Winters and Jack Albertson and Arthur O'Connell and Red Buttons and Stella Stevens and Carol Lindley.
Gene Hackman.
Gene Hackman, of course. Well, he wasn't classic when he made it. He was contemporary.
True.
But it is, to me, the mother of all mothers disaster movie. It's number one in my heart, in my mind.
Yeah.
And you know, we love it.
It really, in my opinion, it holds up.
The effects totally hold up.
Yeah, they do.
Yes. So we're going to skate off that because we've talked about it a lot.
Right.
But we're going to move into a great year for disaster movies. 1974.
Oh, yeah.
Not only gave us Earthquake, but also The Towering Inferno.
Okay. Let's start with Earthquake.
Yes.
You can go back and look at the trailer from that time period, and it's a classic voiceover guy whose name escapes me right now. But the log line is, you feel it as well as see it. Because it had Sense Around,
which was a very short-lived experiment that didn't quite take off. The funny thing about Sense Around was, I don't know how it was done, but you would feel the vibrations of an earthquake while you're sitting in the theater
watching it. They had to retrofit for the theater, for the screenings. They had to change the theater for this film, which was not a cheap thing to do.
Which was hilarious. But the funny part to me was that I think Earthquake came out about the same time as The Godfather Part Two, and so when people were at the theater next door watching The Godfather Part Two, some of the Sense Around was bleeding over, and people were kind of freaked out that all of a sudden their chairs start moving while they're watching, you know, the debauchery of Godfather Two. Well, so there were complaints.
They also had some issues with plaster falling, and I mean, it was not a good thing. They were putting nets up to make sure people weren't getting hurt.
People were freaking out because, you know, plaster would hit them and they would panic. And,
but I think it was great publicity, even though it was tragic stuff. Nobody got hurt, of course.
I know.
And I think it really was good for them.
Really good for them. And I think they did it in a couple of other movies, but then I think they realized the cost and the expense, the payoff wasn't worth the hassle.
Yeah. Before we dive into the list of classic actors that were in the film, the other thing that they did was they decided to air the film on television.
Yes.
And it was too long to air in one fell swoop.
Yes.
And it was too short to air on two different nights. So they, okay, let's just go back and shoot some more.
I know. They added this storyline about this newlywed couple on their way to California for the first time for a job. And I remember it was Deborah Lee Scott.
Yes.
The wonderful Deborah Lee Scott, who people probably know from Mary Hartman,
yes,
and Angie with Donna Pascal.
Yes.
She played her sister. And it was also a guy named Sam Chu Jr., who I'm not too familiar with, but they're the young couple and they're trying to land at LAX in the middle of the big earthquake.
Yes, yes.
Will they survive?
And there was some controversy with the director that,
yes,
he did not want his name put on the film, and the director that then subsequently directed the added sequences,
right,
he didn't have his name on the film either. So anyway, can you find that version of it anywhere? Do you know?
I think so.
Okay.
I think you can still find it.
Yeah.
I think it was directed by Mark Robson,
okay,
who had a long history in Hollywood and kind of became known for sort of schlocky movies later on. So,
All right, let's talk about, as you call it in your blog, the classic star alert for this film.
Classic star alert coming up.
Man, Charlton Heston is right at the top of that list.
Charlton Heston, because, you know, if you're going to experience a devastating earthquake, I want Chuck Heston helping me out.
Right? And of course, these storylines seem to all follow suit. He also has a mistress who's younger than he is.
Genevieve Bujold,
right,
the beautiful French-Canadian actress, plays his way too young mistress.
Right.
Charlton Heston, I mean, he was just a movie god. He was just a reigning star of Hollywood in the 50s and 60s. You know, he had that square jaw and those leading man good looks. And he was in The Greatest Show on Earth and The Ten Commandments. And
Touch of Evil.
Oh, Ben-Hur. Yeah. I mean, he won the Best Actor Oscar for Ben-Hur.
And we can't not mention Planet of the Apes, another
classic
Charlton Heston film.
I know. And you know, Midway, which came a couple of years after this.
Yeah.
You know, so he had a thing for sort of disaster-y movies. He really was the rock-solid classic star lead of this movie.
Okay. But the person that plays his wife is really, we've said before, the patron saint.
She's
our
patron saint from Beneath the Hollywood Sign.
Yes. And it's Ava Gardner.
Ava Gardner. She played Remy Graff. And she was a shrew of a woman. I mean, she was very...
not Ava, her character.
Oh, her character. I mean, she was dramatic and she faked suicides. And she was just a thorn in Charlton Heston's side.
Poor guy.
But it's Ava Gardner. She's Hollywood goddess. I mean, she ranks right up there with Rita Hayworth and Lana Turner and Hedy Lamarr and Elizabeth Taylor as one of the most beautiful leading ladies we've ever had. When she first came to attention at MGM Studios, head honcho Louis B. Mayer, and I don't know if I said this on an earlier episode, but his comment about her was, she can't sing, she can't act, she can't even talk. She's terrific.
Now, he said she couldn't talk because she had a thick accent.
She had a very heavy North Carolina accent.
But she definitely got rid of that.
Yeah, she did. And she learned to act.
I think she did, yeah.
You know,
she
you
really
see,
did.
But then again, her early movies like The Killers and the Hucksters and even Showboat, I mean, you could see that she had some talent.
Mm-hmm.
She had such a charismatic way about her that you didn't even care if she could act or not.
Yeah. Playing her father, though just 7 years older.
Don't you love that?
I know. And it just drives me crazy how they do that. Is Lorne Greene.
We all know Lorne Greene as Ben Cartwright in the popular Western TV series Bonanza, which ran for 14 years, I think. He had a really steady career in film. He played the father of Cliff Robertson in Autumn Leaves with Joan Crawford in 1956. And he's so good as the district attorney in Peyton Place with Lana Turner in 57. I mean, he was definitely a solid classic film star who later went to TV smartly, like the smart ones did.
Sure. Is George Kennedy?
Yeah, we've got a crossover here. A crossover alert.
And here's, crossover alert. George Kennedy appears in this film as well.
George can't get enough of disaster movies.
I'm telling you, you're going to start thinking when you see George Kennedy, if he's hanging out in your house, you're going to go, there's a disaster that's going to happen.
Either a plane's going to crash or we're going to have an earthquake.
Yes, or something.
In the 70s, I think he made a career out of disaster movies, you know,
yeah.
But he plays in Earthquake. He is the jaded, tough cop, Lou Slade.
Okay.
Not a perfect name for George Kennedy.
It's a pretty great name.
And he finds new meaning in life with a cute puppy and a foxy girl named Rosa Amici, played by Victoria Principal. Again, probably a little too young for him, but it was the 70s.
Yep.
But he was great in Earthquake. One of the first scenes he's in, he's chasing a guy through Beverly Hills, and he ends up running the car through Zsa Zsa Gabor's hedges. and he gets in trouble, you know, so he's like the bad cop.
He's the bad Beverly Hills cop.
You know, fight the system, and he doesn't care about Zsa Zsa's hedges.
Right, right. That's hysterical.
So funny.
The supporting cast also included Lloyd Nolan.
Lloyd Nolan, who I love Lloyd Nolan, and real aficionados of old movies will know that he was the original or one of the first actors to play Mike Shane, the detective, in all those great movies about Mike Shane. Lloyd Nolan was just a staple in classic movies. Oh, such a great actor, but he ends up playing the doctor in Earthquake. He's the one who, after, well, I don't want to...
Yeah, spoil, we don't want to give...
Spoiler alert, but yeah. One of the characters has a heart attack and is near death, and
yes.
Lloyd Nolan is
that's
the one
a,
who
that's a pretty big
takes
spoiler.
Care of him, yes.
Barry Sullivan, another.
Oh, Barry Sullivan. I mean, Barry Sullivan started out as a real leading, I mean, a B-level, but
yeah,
a leading
yeah.
man. I mean, he was opposite all these great actresses, and my favorite Barry Sullivan movies, probably, he is so good opposite Barbara Stanwyck in a 1953 drama called Jeopardy.
Mm.
And he plays her husband who... Well, I won't go into it, but he's so good. He's in a great movie called Suspense in 1946 and also Bad Men of Tombstone in 1949 and Payment on Demand opposite Bette Davis. Great actors,
yes.
both of them. Very
yes.
dependable character actors that were great. You know, Earthquake was produced by a guy named Jennings Lang.
Yes.
And Jennings Lang was an incredibly prolific producer back in the day. And he's sort of famous for a scandal that happened in the 1950s.
Mm-hmm.
Jennings Lang was the agent of actress Joan Bennett.
Oh.
And at the time, Joan Bennett was married to Walter Wanger. Well, Walter thought that Joan and Jennings were having an affair, and so he confronted them in the parking lot outside of a restaurant, and he shot Jennings Lang in his manhood.
Oh, no. Were they having an affair?
No, they weren't. But it was one of the biggest scandals of that era.
Oh, my
and so
goodness.
Jennings Lang is always kind of known as the guy who got shot in the balls.
Yeah, wow. Poor guy.
Well, he ended up going on to produce disaster movies, and he ended up finding love with actress-singer Monica Lewis.
Okay.
Who was a lovely, lovely singer and actress. Well, good old Jennings, being the good husband that he was...
He better put her in the movies.
He put her in every movie
good
he
for
did.
Him.
So all of these great 70s disaster movies that he produced, he put Monica in every one of them. And I think her best role is in Earthquake, where she plays Lorne Greene's secretary, Barbara.
Okay.
Who has to go through so much, including being lowered from an office chair by fire hose rope down this
of
office
course.
Building that's crumbling. But
right.
anyway,
that she gets
was,
trapped in.
She was great and, you know, wonderful singer, wonderful actress, and the wife of the producer.
Okay. Next on our list is from 1974, and I was surprised to learn that it was the highest grossing picture of 1974,
yes.
receiving 8 Academy Award nominations.
Yes.
It is The Towering Inferno.
The Towering Inferno. Were there ever bigger stars than Steve McQueen and Paul Newman?
No.
Who headed
no.
up the cast. They're not the ones we're here to talk about. We're here to talk about the classic film stars, and nobody was more classic than Fred Astaire. So we're going to go right into Fred Astaire.
Yes, yes.
And interestingly, this was Fred Astaire's one and only Oscar nomination.
I was surprised to learn that.
So shocking to hear that.
Yes.
We all know him as a song and dance man. But in The Towering Inferno, he plays a con man who's trying to prey on this widow who's played by another classic film star, Jennifer Jones.
Right.
And the two of them together in this movie, I think, are lovely. And I love seeing the two of them. They bring such old Hollywood glamour and class to this movie. And they're great.
And as the skyscraper, The Towering Inferno, the builder, we have the one and only William Holden.
Yes, the man, William Holden.
He is the man.
We all know one of the greatest leading men of all time. Golden Boy, Our Town, Sunset Boulevard, Born Yesterday, Sabrina, The Bridge on the River Kwai. I mean,
and then in 76, Network.
And Network. I mean, he was just one of the biggest, brightest stars we had. And he plays the skyscraper's builder who might have cut some corners here, which caused the fire. So he's a little bit the bad guy.
He's
kind
of the bad guy.
Yeah. He really is. And he spends most of his time in the movie kissing up to a senator played by Robert Vaughn. And he has no time for his daughter played by Susan Blakely, who's married this real horrible guy played by Richard Chamberlain. You can imagine the soap opera antics that ensue here.
Right.
Lots of great star wattage in there.
Well, that's just a taste of some of the disaster movies of that era. I mean, we haven't had a chance to talk about Airport 75.
Or 77 or 79.
And those have so many classic stories.
So many
stars
classic
in them,
stars.
Myrna Loy. And,
yes. And we didn't even get, I wish we had more time because we could get into Skyjacked and The Hindenburg and Beyond the Poseidon Adventure. All these great movies with these great film stars. The Swarm, who can forget that with Olivia de Havilland getting eaten up by bees?
Right.
I mean, come on.
Yeah. you just can't make that stuff up,
you
right?
You can't make that stuff up.
Well, this has been really fun. I'm going to look for these films and revisit them. One of the episodes that I've seen every film that we've talked about. So
Exactly. And I just want to say to the producers who made those movies, thank you. Thank you, thank you for putting our beloved classic movie stars in these movies.
Amen to that. Amen to that. Let's talk about the Hollywood Pop Quiz. Remind everybody what the question was.
Yes, and the question that I actually named a cast of a 1970s disaster movie, and you had to give me the name of the movie. And it was Rock Hudson, Mia Farrow, Robert Forster, and Jeanette Nolan.
Okay.
And it was the movie from 1978.
Yes.
Called Avalanche. Who remembers Avalanche?
Avalanche. I don't remember Avalanche.
Well,
but it's a disaster that hasn't been covered, so
I don't think a lot
not?
Of people remember Avalanche.
Yes. Oh, we would love it if you would follow us on social media. Our handle is at From Beneath the Hollywood Sign. You can find us on Facebook and Instagram. You can also subscribe hitting the button on YouTube.
Hit that button, folks. And also, we'd love to hear from you. I would actually love to hear what your favorite 70s disaster movie is. So go ahead and drop us a line at info@frombeneaththehollywoodsign.com.
That's this week's View.
From Beneath the Hollywood Sign.
You've been listening to From Beneath the Hollywood Sign with Steve Kubine and Nan McNamara, the podcast that celebrates amazing stories of Tinseltown from its golden era. Join us next week for another episode and learn something else about Hollywood you probably never knew. Take a moment and give us a 5-star rating and a positive review. And tell your friends about us, too. It'll help grow the podcast. Visit Steve's website at frombeneaththehollywoodsign.com. The executive producers are Steve Kubine and Nan McNamara. Executive producer and post-production supervisor, Lindsay Schnebley. This podcast is part of the Airwave Media Podcast Network. Visit airwavemedia.com to listen and subscribe to their other fine shows like The Box of Oddities and The Shallow End with Schnebley and Toth. Copyright 2024, all rights reserved. That's a wrap.